She silently cursed the unknown designer under her breath. She'd seen her fair share of charmed or cursed books, including one that was supposed to drive its readers insane, but this was obnoxious. Even an experienced sorcerer might miss the rune, unless he had special protections. And we can warn others to destroy it, too. Unless it's charmed to react badly when the rune is broken, Caleb said. He cast a series of spells over the pamphlet. It doesn't look to be charmed, but there could be something else hidden between the pages. Keep an eye on me, Emily ordered. She peered down at the pamphlet, carefully. And don't let me do anything stupid.
That's a full-time job, Caleb teased.
Emily ignored him as she read the pamphlet. The writer had used the new learning, a combination of English letters and phonic spelling, to make a simple case for justice. And justice. An indictment of the guildmasters and their rule, a condemnation of the other religions and their gods, a simple statement that justice was the sole god of beneficence, and a set of rules and regulations intended to keep the population in line. If anything, it was worse than she'd feared. The entire population would be re-educated until resistance was not only futile, but inconceivable. Crap, she muttered. Frida hurried over to join them.
What now?
Good question, Emily said. The fists of justice had to be stopped. Once they had the city in an iron grip, they'd start advancing into Zangaria. She had no doubt that advance parties of priests were already preparing the true believers for the next step. King Randor would not react calmly when he heard the news.
I don't know.
She contemplated possibilities as Sienna led them back to the house. Attacking justice directly would be futile, at least until they devised a way to defeat the entity. It would just get them killed. Starving the entity of magic might work. She defeated the Manivores using something similar, but Justice might be able to break free of any traps before he ran out of power. The mimic had lasted for quite some time between feeding sessions.
This cannot go on, General Pollock said once they were inside.
His glamour had been removed.
I'll have to find out just how many counselors are actually left. The guildmasters were killed, Caleb said. There will be others who survived, General Pollock told him. Even if the standing guildmasters are dead, they will have successors.
Who will think that there is a real live god walking the streets? Sienna said. We might be alone.
We need help, General Pollock said. If no one tries to resist, they'll have all the time in the world to tighten their grip on the city.
Emily nodded. She'd been in Alexis when King Randor had nearly been overthrown by a coup. The plotters would have won if they'd had a chance to take control of the rest of the city, crushing resistance before it could take shape. But they hadn't. Her lips twitched. They would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for us meddlesome kids.
The moment you step outside the street, you'll be challenged, Sienna pointed out. They already have men watching Sorcerer's Row.
I'll sneak through the gap.
General Pollock sounded enthused by the chance for real action, despite the risks. He hadn't led from the front during the last war against the necromancers.
I have plenty of experience in sneaking around.
He looked at Caleb.
I'll take Caleb with me. His magic can help us avoid detection.
Be careful.
Sienna shared a long look with her husband. And make sure you trust the people you find. Emily winced. The sheer power of the entity was terrifying. Someone who might be trustworthy at one point might be converted into an implacable enemy, just by constant exposure to the presence. She looked at the pamphlet in her hand and cursed the unknown writer under her breath. There was so much subtle magic involved that it would be very difficult to muster resistance. And they have had plenty of time to plant spies everywhere, she thought grimly. The general might walk into a trap.
Be very careful, she said to Caleb.
She held up the pamphlet. And make sure you warn them to burn these. Sienna glowered down at hers.
Nasty. Very nasty.
Emily dropped hers in the fire and watched it burn.
Here's a different question, she said slowly. How much food do we have?
Karen muttered a word, just loudly enough to be heard.
Not much. We have preservation spells on the cooler, but we'll be running out of food within the week, assuming we go on short rations.
Sienna gave her eldest daughter a sharp look.
Start filling bottles and buckets with water before it occurs to them to turn off the pipes, she ordered. Take Marion with you. She can do something useful.
Emily glanced at her in surprise. She hadn't seen Marion all day. But then, Sienna had probably told her to stay in her room until she felt like apologizing.
Emily felt a moment's pity for the younger girl, mixed with annoyance. Marion had every right to mourn her brother, but...
"She's grieving," Emily told herself firmly, "and I won't let it get to me."
"She's still sulking," Karen said, "but I'll try to get her to work."
"See that you do," Sienna said.
Emily looked at the table, thinking hard. If no food was coming into the city, if even the fishing boats were forbidden to leave, the entire population would starve. Sienna and her family could hold out for a week if Karen was right. But what about the poorer families, the ones without magic? It wouldn't be long before the poorer parts of the city began to starve, forcing them to beg for food. And the fists of justice would be right there, ready to offer food with one hand and religious instruction with the other. Starving people would be in no condition to resist.
Caleb caught her eye.
"Do you have any other thought?"
"They'll come after us sooner rather than later," Emily said. The coup plotters had tried to hunt Alassa down, after all. They'd succeeded, too. If General Pollock truly was the last living, or at least free, member of the former government, he'd be hunted, too. The fists of justice would want to convert or eliminate him before he could cause trouble.
"I don't know how long Sorcerer's Row can hold out."
"It's safe," Karen protested.
"It might not be for long," Caleb warned. "You didn't see that thing."
"We have to assume the worst," Sienna said, "and plan for a hasty departure." Karen didn't look as though she believed her mother. Emily didn't blame her for having doubts. Sorcerer's Row was the safest place in the city, if one happened to be a sorcerer or had magical relatives. No one would have dared lay a finger on Karen, or any of her siblings, for fear of Sienna's revenge. And few people would linger in Sorcerer's Row. Outsiders came in, did their business, and then hurried out before a sorcerer decided to use them for target practice.
"But the wards won't stand indefinitely," she thought numbly. "Not now."
"We can fight," Croce said. "We have weapons."
"Only a fool fights in a burning house, son," General Pollock said warningly.
He waved a hand at the wall. "We'd be surrounded, trapped in our own house. Even if they couldn't break in, they could keep us from breaking out."
Emily caught the expression on Caleb's face and winced in sympathy. General Pollock had pushed Casper hard, but he'd also made no secret of the fact he favored his eldest son. Caleb had never quite clicked with his father. He was brave and a skillful magician, but he was no fighter. Croce, on the other hand, was doing well at Stronghold. She wondered, grimly, if General Pollock saw his youngest son as a replacement for his eldest.
"I'm sorry," she thought.
"Perhaps we should move now," Sienna said. "There are places in Fishing Place we could stay."
Karen smirked.
"I thought Fishing Place was not safe."
"Nowhere is safe now," Sienna said.
"Better to wait for darkness before we move."
General Pollock reached for his cloak.
"Caleb, you're with me."
Caleb's face was unreadable as he followed his father to the door, but Emily knew he was dismayed. She didn't blame him. Caleb wanted his father's approval, but he couldn't do what he needed to do to get it. Casper had suffered the same problem, yet... She shook her head, wishing she could give Caleb some reassurance. She didn't want him to die, too.
"I need to contact Alassa," she said once Caleb was gone. "She has to know what's happening here."
"Tell her that we will try to deal with the problem ourselves," Sienna said. "The last thing we want is an invasion force crossing the bridges."
"And getting slaughtered by justice,"
Frida put in.
Emily nodded. "I'll tell her," she said, although she didn't know what King Randor could or would do. He had sorcerers under his command, including Jade. Maybe he'd order them to do something stupid.
"And I'll warn Lady Barb, too."
"Make sure she knows not to teleport into the city," Sienna warned. "The presence makes teleporting dangerous."
"Just like the haze in Farrakhan," Emily said, as she headed for the door. The technique was different, she was sure, but the results were similar.
"Do you know if Janus or any of his fellows came from Heart's Eye?"
Sienna's eyes narrowed.
"To the best of my knowledge, Janus does not have any actual magic.
but the Fists of Justice probably have a few sorcerers working for them.
Emily nodded and hurried up the stairs. Frida followed her into the bedroom, then sat and watched as Emily wrote a message to Alatha on the chat parchment. She'd hoped her friend or her husband were close enough to the parchment to see it glow and write a reply, but there was no response. Scowling, she put the parchment on the dressing table and wrote a long letter explaining what was going on. Her wrist hurt after she'd finished, but she forced herself to write a second note to Lady Barb. She should be able to see the note and respond quickly.
She might not be able to come, Emily mused.
She ran her fingers over the chat parchment, thoughtfully. Something was nagging at the back of her mind. But what? She might be deep in the Blighted Lands.
Her mouth dropped open as the pieces fell into place. The speaker had used an odd spell to petrify the banker, but it was similar, very similar, to the spell Aloha had used to make the first set of chat parchments. Emily was sure of it. The chat parchments did carry magic from one piece of parchment to the others. Indeed, in some ways, they were all the same piece of parchment. It was a simple spell on the surface, but it became far more complicated when someone tried to write it down. And someone had warped it into a nightmare. She looked down at the parchment, not seeing anything. The secret behind Aloha's spell had leaked quickly, unsurprisingly. Magicians could be relied upon to try to duplicate spells once they knew something was possible. It was no surprise that someone had managed to improve on the original piece of work. Using it to transfer magic was really nothing more than scaling up the chat spell work. And then they channel it into a spell concealed in the staff, she thought. She couldn't help feeling a flicker of admiration. Whoever had modified the spell was brilliant. They must have been using the staff to boost the presence, too. She sobered. And they're using their talents to support a theocratic state. Shit, she muttered. Frida looked up.
Emily?
There are spells to shatter wands, Emily mused. Aren't there?
Yeah.
Frida's right arm twitched. She'd been forced to use a wand at Mountaintop. It would have stunted her magic if Emily hadn't taught her how to use her powers without it.
I've had them used on me.
We can use them against the speakers, Emily said. She felt better than she had for a long time, just putting the pieces together. I wonder if they have amplifiers scattered through the city. Frida frowned.
Amplifiers of what?
Magic. Emily scowled. The last time she'd seen anything like it had been at Whitehall. But we still have the problem of just how to deal with justice. She rose. We need to talk to an expert, and Marcus is the only expert we have.
And so you're sneaking out to see him, Frida said. You are going to tell Sienna, aren't you?
I'll have to. Emily had no idea if Marcus was still alive, but she needed to find out. Aloha had taken up an apprenticeship somewhere and wouldn't thank anyone who disturbed her. And you'd better come with me.
With pleasure, Frida said.
Her smile widened.
It isn't safe out there.
Chapter 27
You look funny, Frida said.
So do you, Emily countered. The glamour was definitely in place. Frida looked like a normal young man, but there was something odd about the way she moved. Try to walk more like a man.
So I should swing my shoulders and thrust out my chest?
Frida stuck out her tongue, mischievously.
And stick my head so high in the air that I bang my chin into the nearest wall, which I didn't see because my eyes were looking up.
Just walk normally, Emily said, and try not to make eye contact. She sighed as she tested her own spell. It was easy enough to use a glamour to look like a different woman. She'd done it often enough, but passing for a grown man was a great deal harder. Anyone who didn't know the glamour was there might not notice it, yet they might realize, at some point, that there was something odd about the two young men. And once they got suspicious, they might look closer and eventually peer through the glamour. Ready, she said. Let's go. The glamour flickered the moment they stepped out of the house and brushed against the network of wards and sensing spells. Emily had to smile, even though it wasn't really funny. Trying to break through a glamour was considered bad manners,
particularly if the glamour covered up some minor blemish rather than anything more serious. But once they walked out of Sorcerer's Row, the glamour settled back into place. She allowed herself a moment of relief as they headed down the streets, making sure to steer well away from Temple Row. The Fists of Justice would take an interest in anyone who went there. Beneficence wasn't her city, but she still felt a pang at seeing just how much the city had changed in less than a week. The shops were closed, homes barricaded, and the streets almost deserted, save for a handful of men scurrying to and fro. There were no women at all, not even prostitutes. But then the Fists of Justice had made it clear that whores were sinners too. And it doesn't matter to them if the women had a real choice or not, she thought darkly. All that matters is that they sold their bodies for money. She gritted her teeth as they walked past a row of closed shops. She didn't understand how a woman could willingly sell her body, giving herself to a dozen different men in a day. But she understood that choices were sometimes limited. If someone had to choose between prostitution or starvation and death, which choice should they make? Which choice would she make? She liked to think she would sooner die than sell herself, but she knew it wasn't that easy. And if she'd had children, the choice would be even harder. Could she leave them to starve, too? But the Fists of Justice don't care about circumstances, she thought. That had shown through their words. They didn't care why someone had made a bad choice. They didn't care that all the other alternatives were worse. Only punishment mattered. All they want is power. She shook her head. She could see their point. Once someone started accepting excuses, where did they stop? But she could also see they were taking it too far. She'd heard similar arguments back on Earth, with religious leaders convinced they were in the right and that the other side was pure evil. There was a difference between murder and killing someone in self-defense, but the Fists of Justice had long since lost perspective. All they wanted to do now was impose their will on the entire city. A loud noise up ahead brought her out of her thoughts. She looked down the street and swore inwardly as she saw the crowd gathered outside Banker's Row. They hurled abuse at the bankers, promising to tear them limb from limb as soon as they stepped outside the wards. A couple of banks on the edge of the street had been burned to the ground, while others were so heavily protected that the rioters didn't have a hope of setting them on fire. But it hadn't helped some of their staff. A dozen men and five women hung from makeshift gallows, their bodies swinging in the breeze. It looked as though they'd been beaten to death first, then hung. She knew it wouldn't have been quick. "We'll have to use the tunnel," she muttered. The Fists of Justice were patrolling the edge of the crowd, sometimes flicking their whips at protesters who weren't enthusiastic enough to suit them. "Come on." She half expected trouble outside the tunnel entrance, but the house looked completely untouched. The wards opened as soon as she touched the doorknob, allowing her to slip inside the house and down a short flight of stairs to the tunnel entrance. She braced herself as she opened the hatch, then cast a pair of light globes as they hurried down the tunnel. Nothing barred their way until they reached the far end, where an iron door was firmly shut. She pressed her fingers against it, reaching out with her magic. The unlocking spell was so carefully hidden that it took her nearly 10 minutes to find.
"Neat,"
Frida said. She sounded impressed as more protective wards shimmered into existence. Emily felt her glamour flicker, then fail completely.
"If you'd tried to blast the door open, Emily, the blowback would have killed us both."
"Glad you like it."
Marcus stood just inside the door, looking grim. "It took weeks to put it together." Emily eyed him, concerned. Marcus looked as though he hadn't slept for a week. His face was pale. There were dark rings around his eyes, and his hands wouldn't stop twitching. He could have left the bank at any moment, she knew, but he might not have been able to get back inside. And yet who knew when the mob would discover the tunnel? Would Marcus be able to escape if they blocked his way?
"You need to sleep," she said bluntly. "I'll sleep when I'm dead."
Marcus turned, motioning them to follow him.
"I took the precaution of laying in a stockpile of food and arranging for some of my staff to sleep here, but I didn't expect..."
He waved a hand towards the doors as they entered the lobby. The air crawled with protective wards, but Emily could still hear the braying of the crowd.
A couple dozen children, ranging from 3 to 10, kicked a ball around the room, watched by their parents and older siblings. The men were armed, she saw, and some of the women carried wands, but they couldn't hope to defend themselves if the wards shattered. And, she saw in their hopeless eyes, everyone knew it was just a matter of time.
"They're safer in here," Frida said.
"Until we run out of food," Marcus said. "I designed this place as a fortress, and the wards will keep out any conventional threat, but we're short on food. We may have to evacuate in a couple of weeks or so."
"And then get caught," Emily said. Marcus led them up to his office and closed the door.
"I assume you know what's going on outside," he said, as he waved them to seats. "What's happening?"
"Trouble," Emily said. She ran through the whole story, starting with Justice's appearance and ending with the charmed pamphlet. Marcus listened carefully, not saying a word, as she outlined her belief that the god was nothing more than a magic trick. But trick or no trick, Justice was immensely powerful. The spells that had created the entity and allowed it to channel power to its followers had to be handled carefully.
Marcus chuckled humorlessly when she'd finished.
"I was still working my way through the papers." His chuckle became a giggle. "I was wasting my time, wasn't I?"
"Yeah," Frida said. "It looks that way."
Emily shot her a sharp look.
"You have to be careful," she said to Marcus. "The wards are blocking out its influence, but they won't last forever."
"A god could snap my wards easily."
Marcus jabbed a finger towards the window and the crowd below.
"That they haven't come to crush me suggests they can't."
"Unless they want a scapegoat," Frida said.
Emily looked at her in surprise.
"There has to be someone to blame for their failures."
"And then someone else will ask why they haven't punished Marcus already," Emily countered, although she knew Frida had a point.
Tyrants found scapegoats useful when it came to avoiding blame for their own failures. And if the scapegoats were powerless, there was no danger of them turning on their enemies. "What answer will they give?"
"Not a good one." Marcus shook his head. "The real joke is that I think I figured out a solution to the mess Vesperian created."
Emily snorted. "I wish you'd found it a week ago."
"So do I."
Marcus shrugged.
"We can't replace the money Vesperian lost, but we can buy back the notes. Not at face value, I admit. We don't have that sort of money, even if we pool all of our remaining funds. But we can make sure that some of the investors get some of their cash back."
Emily considered it. "And it will give you a claim on the railway," she said, "and its stockpile of goods."
"Assuming it survives," Marcus said. "There were people talking about burning the station to the ground before Justice made his appearance. We could recover the iron if someone melted the engines, but it wouldn't be so useful. There would be a glut on the market."
"The law of supply and demand strikes again," Emily said dryly. Frida cleared her throat.
"The problem is rather more serious," she pointed out.
She turned and walked to the windows.
"The Fists of Justice are in firm control."
"And bent on making us pay for our sins," Marcus said. "Literally."
Emily frowned. There was something in his voice.
"Do you know them?" "I had an uncle who was a devotee," Marcus said. He wasn't a very important man, so no one really cared what he did. He was 40, and he acted like he was 20, holding wild parties and drinking from dusk till dawn. He never had any trouble getting friends to come, either. They knew he was good for wine, women, and song."
"I know the type," Emily said.
"Everyone thought he was mad," Marcus added. "He partied in the night, then scourged himself in the day. He'd hurt himself, curse himself. He'd fast for long hours, pushing his body to the limits. He went on and on about how he was a sinner, about how he deserved to be punished for his crimes. He just never stopped. And then one day his heart gave out. And that was that."
Emily shuddered.
"What did he do?"
"Nothing, as far as anyone knew,"
Marcus said.
"He was a lesser son of a lesser branch on the family tree. Not important enough to be considered worthy marriage material, but too attached to the family wealth to cut ties and set off on his own. Maybe it was just the heavy drinking. Most sorcerers know better than to drink heavily."
He shook his head.
"But my uncle embraced their beliefs willingly.
What happens when someone tries to impose such rules on an entire city?
They have something that looks like a god, Emily said. They might succeed.
They are succeeding, Marcus pointed out.
Emily felt cold. Once, years ago, she'd read a story where divine laws were divinely enforced. It had struck her as utterly horrific. The world had been bad for everyone, particularly women, even though the creature in charge hadn't been a real god. But she knew there were people who would consider such a world to be ideal, especially if they were the ones on top. The fists of justice were already well on the way to turning beneficence into a nightmare.
Then we will have to stop them, Emily said. She wondered if Alassa had seen the message yet.
King Randor had been keeping her hopping over the last months, moving from castle to castle in hopes of tightening her ties to her nobility.
Whatever it takes.
Good luck, Marcus said. How do you intend to proceed?
I wanted to consult with you about magic, Emily said.
She outlined what she'd sensed in the morning and how it linked to the chat parchments. Is there any way to disrupt the link?
Marcus frowned. I don't believe so.
He stroked his chin thoughtfully.
Allowing magic to flow from the entity to a staff might be more complicated than merely sending words, but it's still magic. As long as the staffs were linked, magic would be able to run between them.
And then it flows into the spell work.
Frida turned and walked back to join them, her face grim.
Overpowering a wand spell can be disastrous.
Perhaps we should concentrate on disrupting the spellware instead, Emily mused. And then the magic would flow in all directions.
Or explode, Marcus said. We could even try to drain the power.
Only if we lured justice into a prepared battleground, Emily said.
A necromancer could drain another magician of power, but it would cost them their sanity, if they survived the experience.
Justice was powerful enough to overload and kill anyone stupid enough to try to drain him.
They would see the trap, wouldn't they?
Perhaps, Marcus said. We could use runes to steer magic away from him, if his spells started coming apart.
Emily frowned. A normal spell would leak power until it finally collapsed, although that could take some time. But if justice was something akin to a mimic, and she suspected he had a lot in common with them, she was fairly sure he would recycle power rather than lose it.
Perhaps, given enough time, they could set up a trap. But it wouldn't work unless the entity was careless, and she knew they couldn't count on anything of the sort.
We need more information.
She silently promised herself that she would try to dispel justice the next time she faced the entity. It was worth trying. Few magicians would consider using such a simple spell against a god.
And we need to lay our plans carefully.
I'll start rigging a trap here, Marcus said. If he decides to break in, we can at least try to delay him.
Emily nodded, although she suspected it would be pointless.
Justice was simply too powerful to be stopped easily. If there was something physical to him, they could steal gunpowder from the powder mills and try to blow him up. She didn't think that would work either. She knew it wouldn't stop a mimic, but it might slow him down. Besides, better to secure the gunpowder before the fists of justice put it to use. Sienna and the other sorcerers might not recognize it as a potential threat.
General Pollock will, she told herself. He's seen firearms in action.
We have to get back, she said.
Do you have a spare chat parchment?
I have several pieces, Marcus said. You know how to activate them?
Yes, Emily said. She'd done it before, once. Have you told Melissa about this?
She urged me to run.
Marcus looked up at Melissa's portrait, but, you know, I couldn't leave.
Emily understood. Marcus wasn't anything special without his family.
There were plenty of other talented magicians out there, but the bank was something new, the first of its kind. Something that could change the world.
Marcus could no more abandon the Bank of Silence than Emily could abandon Heart's Eye and the Nexus Point.
Getting out of the city might prove difficult, Emily agreed. Don't try to teleport.
I might have to swim, Marcus said, or turn into a bird and fly.
Good luck, Frida said sarcastically. They'll probably have archers on the walls by now.
Emily replaced her glamour, then followed Frida back through the tunnel and out onto the streets. The racket from the mob was growing louder, shouting and screaming for justice to come and teach the bankers a lesson. Emily shuddered, despite herself, at the waves of emotion roiling through the sound. The people wanted someone to blame for everything, and they'd chosen the bankers. It never seemed to occur to them that everyone who'd fallen for Vesperian's prattle had played a role in their own downfall. "And some of them are just out to cause trouble," she thought, as they hurried away from Banker's Row. "They want to tear the place to the ground." She stopped dead as she saw the fists of justice gathered around a mid-sized house. A small crowd watched, hooting and hollering, as a man, a woman, and four children were marched out of the building, their hands trapped in solid wooden boards placed around their necks. They were helpless, utterly defenseless. Emily felt sick as the jeers grew louder. She didn't know what the family had done or what they were supposed to have done, but she wanted to help them. She needed to help them. But the fists of justice were carrying staffs and wearing charmed breastplates. She couldn't stop them without revealing her presence, drawing the entity to her. She'd give up every hope of stopping them for good. "Damn you," she thought. She turned and led Frida away, cursing herself. "And damn me, too." Chapter 28. Caleb met them as soon as they were inside the house. "Are you all right?" Emily groaned as she dispelled the remainder of the glamour. "I've been better," she said softly. She'd walked away, leaving a family to their fate. "How about you?" "We just got back," Caleb said. He helped her remove her cloak and hung it on a peg. "They're in the living room, waiting for you."
"Good."
Emily glanced at Frida. "Shall we go?" General Pollock had placed a large map on the table, Emily saw, when she walked into the living room. Beneficence was probably not drawn to scale, she noted as she surveyed the odd design, but it was fairly usable. Someone had scribbled a series of notes on the paper, using red ink to designate enemy positions. She hoped the map wasn't particularly valuable.
"Lady Emily," a voice said, "I am pleased to see that you have returned home."
Emily looked up and blinked. Harmon sat on the far side of the table, next to three men Emily didn't recognize. One looked like a fisherman. The other two were either soldiers or craftsmen. There was an air of dignity about them that reminded her of some of the other craftsmen she'd met.
"I'm glad you survived," Emily managed. She'd assumed Harmon had been killed during the massacre. "How did you get out of the square?"
Harmon looked pained.
"I survived for the very simple reason I wasn't there," he said. "The Grand Guildmaster believed that my presence would not be welcomed, so I spent the day supervising the accountants who were dismantling Vesperian's web of lies, and then I hid when they came for me." "I found him in the Mirthful Mermaid," General Pollock said briskly. "Our emergency plans called for using the bar as a rendezvous point, if the city was attacked."
"Because of all the booze," Sienna said dryly.
"And because it is far enough from the guild hall to be off anyone's target list," Harmon said quickly.
He glanced at Emily.
"Should I be talking about that to you?" "She's not going to tell King Randor," Caleb said hotly.
Emily nodded in agreement. King Randor was the only significant outside threat, as far as Beneficence was concerned. The other kingdoms would be unable to get an army into the city without marching over Zangaria, not when Beneficence controlled the waters around its territory. King Randor would be interested to know where the guildmasters would assemble if all hell broke loose, but right now it didn't matter. The real problem was defeating the Fists of Justice before it was too late. "Besides, they'll change the plan after I leave," she thought. "They won't want to take the risk that I might tell King Randor."
"I beg your pardon, Lady Emily," Harmon said. "It is my duty as a guildmaster to protect the city." "A guildmaster who only kept his position on sufferance," the fisherman sneered. "You wouldn't have been allowed to stay away if you were actually important." "Dagmar, my guild could have prevented this crisis," Harmon snapped. "If you'd listened to me, your guild thought it was a fun idea to cheat us out of our money," Dagmar said. "You are lucky to be allowed to live." "And you do not speak for all of us," one of the others insisted. "We do not have a quorum." We won't, Harmon snapped. The other guildmasters are dead. I'm the last survivor, and you are worthless,
Dagmar snapped back.
Do you think you can lead us to victory?
The guildmasters themselves are corrupt, the third man said. They need to be replaced completely.
Blasphemy, Harmon insisted. Ambrose, you are nothing more than a traitor.
General Pollock slapped the table hard. This is not the time to fight. His voice was frigid. Need I remind you that most of the city guard has been captured, or subverted, or killed? Need I remind you that our city, our home, is being steadily reshaped while we sit here and bicker like children? Need I remind you that we, yes, we, represent the remnants of the government? Need I remind you?
He looked from face to face.
This is not the time to fight, he repeated. After we win, we will elect new guildmasters and rebuild the government.
Or replace it, Ambrose said.
We will decide how best to proceed after we win, General Pollock said. We do not have much time. Sorcerer's Row is the safest place in the city, but it won't remain safe for long.
There have been a series of probes against the wards, looking for weak points, Sienna said coolly. Someone is readying themselves to break into the street.
Harmon looked as though he wanted to say something, but General Pollock glared him into silence.
Emily eyed him thoughtfully. She didn't pretend to understand the politics, but Harmon was definitely unpopular. Did he really think he could boss everyone else around, just because he was the last guildmaster? Or was he desperately trying to cling to something he'd once owned? It wasn't as if the Fists of Justice would have any use for him either.
General Pollock ran his fingers over the map. I managed to speak to a number of old friends, he said. We put together this outline. As you can see, the Fists have established patrol bases around the city and are currently running patrols through the major streets. So far, they've left the alleyways, fishing place, and the lower depths alone. But I expect that to change as they build their numbers. Starry Light and Temple Row, by contrast, have a strong presence.
Makes sense, Harmon said. The wealthiest part of the city.
Correct, General Pollock said. They've already arrested a number of prominent citizens and their families, taking them to the Iron Cage. I don't know what they've done to the former occupants, but I don't think it was anything good.
Emily glanced at Caleb. The Iron Cage?
The city jail, Caleb explained. One of the strongest buildings in the city.
Getting them out will be impossible, Harmon said. That building is tough.
Correct, General Pollock said. We would probably be able to get inside if we were uninterrupted, but they'll respond at once to any challenge to their power. We'd be knee-deep in Fists before we got through the first set of wards.
And they have a god, Harmon said. How do we fight that?
It's a trick, General Pollock said. Justice is nothing more than a complex set of spells.
Emily winced inwardly. If she was right, that was far too close to the truth for her peace of mind. They might defeat Justice only to discover the birth of a dozen other entities within the year.
That's no spell, Dagmar said.
It can be beaten, Sienna said. It's just a matter of figuring out how.
Harmon frowned.
And if you're wrong, then it's a god.
Dagmar sounded oddly amused.
It can still be beaten.
Emily gave him a surprised look. How could someone believe that a creature was a god, and yet, at the same time, believe it could be beaten? But then the Norse, Roman, and Greek gods hadn't been invincible either. Justice might be powerful. There was no doubt about that, she knew all too well, but not unstoppable. God or no god, the entity could be stopped. And we have to keep believing that, she told herself firmly. If we believe we cannot defeat him, we may as well surrender now.
It is neither all-seeing nor all-powerful. Sienna crossed her arms under her breasts as Emily glanced at her.
It would have crushed us all by now if it were a true god. General Pollock nodded.
For the moment, we will do our best to evade justice while we undermine their control over the city, he said. We do not have the time, unfortunately, to gather the information we need before taking the offensive. The longer we wait, the stronger their position will be.
But that would mean risking exposure, Harmon pointed out. Shouldn't we build up our strength first?
They'll be doing the same, General Pollock said. and they already have a big head start.
They also have a god.
All right, a powerful entity, Harmon insisted. We'd be drawing their attention. You're already at the top of their list of targets, General Pollock said. You are, after all, the last surviving guildmaster.
Harmon looked pale.
Fine. How do you want to proceed?
We'll wait until nightfall, General Pollock said. At that point, we'll gather our forces and launch a set of hit-and-run attacks against their positions. If we hit here...
He tapped a street on the map, only a short distance from Sorcerer's Row.
They will dispatch reinforcements, of course, from Temple Row. It's their closest strong point.
It's too close, Harmon said.
Dagmar frowned.
Or do you have something else in mind?
It's a diversion, General Pollock said. We need to sneak someone into the temple. Janus, the bastard, does not appear to have moved into the guild hall, nor has he gone to the castle. He's staying in the temple and rarely showing himself.
Emily frowned. If Janus wasn't showing himself, what did it mean? Was he the one pulling Justice's strings? It would make sense, although Janus had been at the square when Justice had made his big appearance. Her tired mind produced a dozen possibilities, each one more complex than the last. Janus might even be Justice.
He might just be consolidating his power, Croce said. It's only been a day since the coup.
True, Emily thought.
We have to find out what he's really doing before we can figure out how to counter it, General Pollock said. And that means getting into the temple and finding out.
He looked at Emily.
Lady Emily, will you attempt to sneak into the temple?
Emily blinked in surprise, then glanced at Caleb. Her boyfriend looked as surprised as Emily felt. He hadn't known his father planned to ask Emily to undertake a dangerous, perhaps suicidal mission. Emily wondered, vaguely, if he'd expected to be asked first. It made sense, she supposed. But then General Pollock had watched her walk into Heart's Eye and kill a necromancer. He might hope she could do the same again. But we're not facing a necromancer, Emily thought. She'd killed a mimic, but she'd had help. This might be far more dangerous. She hesitated, just long enough to see a sneer drift onto Harmon's face. Sienna was better trained and more experienced, but she would be needed on the front lines. She didn't know how many other combat sorcerers were in the city, yet some of them would be needed with Sienna, and others would refuse to cooperate. Caleb would be needed too, while the rest of his siblings were too young. And none of them had any real experience with mimics. She was the best choice.
I'll go,
she said quietly.
I'll come with you, Caleb said.
You're going to be here, General Pollock said. I need you to start putting together a set of wands.
Caleb stared at him.
Father, she's going to need help.
I can go with her.
Frida's voice was silky smooth. Caleb, you are going to be needed here. Emily looked at General Pollock. He was right, she knew. Caleb would be more useful on the streets. But had the general made that decision because it was the practical solution? Or because he didn't want to send a second son into danger by her side? Casper had died because he'd followed her into Heart's Eye. Might General Pollock wonder if Caleb would go the same way? She hoped, deep inside, that she would never know.
Frida can help me, she murmured.
The thought of walking into the temple, and perhaps confronting Justice for the second time, scared her more than she cared to admit. But at least they were doing something.
I'll be fine.
General Pollock looked at his watch. We'll move out after sunset, he said. That gives us 5 hours to assemble the troops.
Most of whom have no training, Harmon warned. And the ones who do haven't been in the military for years.
You never forget, General Pollock said. Emily, Frida, get some rest.
Understood, Emily said.
I'll come with you.
Caleb ignored his mother, clearing her throat.
We need to talk.
Emily nodded, not trusting herself to look at Sienna. They walked out of the room and up the stairs. Marion was coming out of her bedroom as they approached, looking murderous. The expression on her face was nasty enough to make Emily ready a spell to defend herself just in case. It didn't look as though Marion wanted to apologize for anything. The younger girl walked down the stairs and through the bottom door, never looking back.
Give us some privacy, Caleb said to Frida. Please.
Frida glanced at Emily, then hurried into the bedroom. Emily couldn't help noticing that she'd left the door open, just a crack. Caleb cast a privacy ward, then two more, blurring them together to defeat any listening ears. Emily hoped it wouldn't bring Frida running out of the bedroom to discover why everything had gone quiet.
He didn't tell me, Caleb said. I didn't know he was going to ask you to do that.
Emily, you could get killed in the temple.
I know, Emily said.
She was scared, but she boxed the fear away in her mind, refusing to allow it to dominate her. I understand the risks.
Caleb stared at her. You could be killed, or worse. What will happen when that creature focuses on you?
Emily shivered. Justice had been powerful. Powerful enough to make her waver despite all her defenses. She had more experience with mind manipulation than the average student at Whitehall, but still, justice had nearly overwhelmed her. And she'd been quite some distance from the entity. Who knew what would happen if she was right next to it, or if it focused all its power on her?
I'm the best qualified person to walk into the temple, Emily said, pushing her doubts and fears aside.
Everyone else is needed back here.
Sarnia could go, Caleb snapped. She's got the power and experience.
No, she doesn't, Emily said. She had no idea if Sarnia had even joined the resistance. The older woman had a family she wouldn't care to see threatened. I'm better qualified than almost anyone else.
Caleb shook his head slowly. I don't want to lose you, he said.
He looked into her eyes.
This...
Emily wished, suddenly, that she could promise she'd survive. But she knew Caleb was right. Entering the temple would be dangerous. Very dangerous. If she was caught, she would be killed. Or brainwashed. Her defenses were tough, but they wouldn't stand up to sustained attack. No defense was perfect. Lady Barb had hammered that into her time and time again. She reached out and took his hand.
I'll be fine, she said.
You'll be fine, too.
You might not be, Caleb said. Emily.
He sighed.
I'm sorry.
Emily blinked.
What for? All of this.
Caleb waved a hand at the wall.
My family. Everything.
Don't worry about it, Emily said. She pulled him close and hugged him, despite the risk. It had been easy at Whitehall, where they'd just been students. It had been easy to be themselves. But here, Caleb's family was watching them, judging them. It wasn't easy to relax. She hugged him tighter, unsure if she envied or pitied him. On one hand, Caleb had a family that genuinely loved him. On the other, the family restricted him in ways Emily could barely comprehend.
You're not just marrying him, Lady Barb had said 2 years ago. You're marrying his entire family.
Caleb returned her hug slowly.
I'm sorry, he whispered. I wish...
Emily heard something at the bottom of the stairs and peered down. Marion stood there, looking up at them. Caleb pulled himself free and glared at his younger sister, magic sparking around his fingertips. Emily glanced at him in surprise, wondering if he would actually hex the younger girl. And yet, as Marion stamped up the stairs, she felt Caleb's magic fading back into nothingness.
I'm sorry about her, too, Caleb said, once Marion had walked into her room and slammed the door.
Emily could hear love and affection in his voice.
She isn't normally like this.
She's not having a good time, Emily said, and she's too young to understand. She shook her head. Marion was probably having problems coping, now all of her siblings were away at school, leaving her alone with her parents. On one hand, someone would be looking after her. On the other, she'd have her mother's undivided attention. And she was growing up, watching helplessly as her body changed. Emily remembered going through puberty herself and shivered. That had not been a pleasant experience. At least Marion has a mother who will help her through it, she thought darkly. Her mother had shouted at her when she'd tried to talk about female matters. There was no way in hell she'd ask her stepfather for advice. Marion didn't know how lucky she was. She has a family who loves her. After this, we'll go back to Whitehall, she promised. We can go up the mountain and...
If we have time, Caleb said.
He didn't sound enthusiastic.
We are going to have to work hard to catch up with everyone else.
I know. Emily lifted her head, parting her lips. But we can do it.
Caleb leaned down and kissed her gently. I hope so, he said as he pulled back. But we have to survive the next few days first.
We will,
Emily promised.
Chapter 29. It was dark, very dark. Emily slipped through the back streets, silently cursing the fists of justice as she kept a careful lookout for spies. Frida followed, watching her back. Beneficence had once been the most well-lit city on the nameless world, illuminated with gaslights that wouldn't have been out of place in Victorian London. Now the city was as dark and silent as the grave. Even the footpads and other criminals seemed to have removed themselves from the streets. The only people she'd seen since they'd slipped out of Sorcerer's Row were a couple of patrols prowling the streets. They'd walked past Emily and Frida without noticing them. She tested the glamour as they picked their way towards Temple Row. The night vision spell made everything look eerie, creating pools of shadow that seemed to move the moment she looked away. She was relieved, despite herself, that most of the statues had been destroyed, even though she knew two-thirds of the city considered the feeling blasphemy. The statues would have looked far too creepy in the gray haze. She spotted a handful of blankets, clearly concealing something positioned against the wall. She eyed them for a long moment before deciding that whatever owned them was trying to hide. The fists of justice, if the reports were to be believed, hadn't been kind to anyone they'd caught on the streets after dark. The presence grew stronger as they neared their destination, a pulsing heartbeat that echoed through the air and brushed against her magic. Even mundanes could sense it, according to General Pollock. Emily had no idea how that worked, but she didn't blame the resistance for feeling scared. They needed more data before they did anything more than attacking patrols and raiding isolated outposts. She took a breath, bracing herself as the presence seemed to grow stronger for a moment. Her attention seemed to draw its attention. Don't think about it, she told herself. Justice would worm its way through the gaps in her defenses if she gave it a chance. She wished, grimly, that there had been a chance to get the children out of the city. They'd be the most vulnerable to a constant subtle whispering at the back of their minds. Keep your eyes on the ball. Frida touched her hand as they reached the end of the alleyway. A dozen fists stood at the edge of Temple Row, their eyes flickering from side to side as they watched the streets. Beyond them, workmen and slaves carted away the debris from the other temples, even though night had fallen 2 hours ago. Emily glanced back at the fists and shivered, remembering the guards who defended Farrakhan. They'd been smoking, chatting quietly to keep themselves awake, but the fists seemed utterly intent on their work. There was something oddly inhuman about them, as if all their humanity had been leached away. She glanced at Frida, who held up her fingers in a sign Emily remembered from Mountaintop. Proctors. Emily looked at the fists. Proctors? The Mountaintop Proctors had been dead bodies animated by the wards. They'd been drained of life force to feed the wards, then put to work as enforcers to keep the students in line. She didn't think the Hands of Justice would have done the same. Would they? They'd be in real trouble if the secret had leaked out before the coup. But now, they could turn their fanatics into zombies if they wished. They were already committed to victory or extinction. And they might have drained them to feed Justice, Emily thought. She reached out with her senses as carefully as she could, trying to detect a glamour that might have hidden a dead face, but there was too much interference for her to be sure of anything. That might be where he's getting his power. She inched back into the alleyway before any of the fanatics caught a glimpse of them. The glamour should hide them from unwary eyes, but she had no idea how well it would hold up against the fanatics. An alert set of guards might just investigate something they'd glimpsed out of the corner of their eyes, even though it might have been nothing. And if they had sorcerers, or merely a handful of magic users, the glamour wouldn't last long at all. Frida held up her hands again. 5 minutes, she signaled. Then we will see. Emily nodded. General Pollock had planned a series of attacks, all designed to get in, land a punch, and then get out again before the enemy had a chance to respond.
He'd admitted openly that the best they could do was give the Fists a bloody nose, but it might buy time for Emily and Frida to slip into Temple Row. If, of course, the watching guards were distracted. Emily bit her lip, concerned. The fanatics didn't look as though they would be distracted easily. But the slaves might try to escape, she thought, peering out of the alleyway. I would, if I'd been given the chance. She shuddered. She'd been told that some slaves were merely working off debts, a concept she found sickening, even if people insisted such slaves were treated well. But these slaves were definitely working against their will. A number even wore the tattered remains of priestly garb, when they'd been allowed to wear anything at all. They were being forced to rip their own temples to shreds. She gritted her teeth as she pulled her head back, knowing there was nothing she could do to help them. She'd just have to hope they defeated the Fists of Justice as quickly as possible. A brilliant flash of light came from Sorcerer's Row. Emily braced herself as the guards looked around, apparently confused. Two more flashes of light followed, both marking attacks on enemy patrols. Sienna and her fellows spent power freely, making it clear that they were going on the offensive, while their mundane counterparts launched more subtle attacks. The Fists of Justice would have to react quickly, General Pollock insisted, if they wanted to retake control of the streets. And their nearest reinforcements were at Temple Row. Unless they're more intent on preserving the temple than retaking the streets, Emily thought grimly. The plan had seemed workable when they'd been going through the final aspects after a brief nap, but now it struck her as being more than a little chancy. They'd underestimated the sheer level of activity around the building. They may think they can retake control in the morning. She tensed as she heard the sound of running footsteps. A trio of men in red robes, one carrying a staff that blazed with power, ran out of the Temple of Justice and straight towards the guards. There was a brief exchange of orders. Then the guards followed the priests onto the streets, away from Temple Row. Emily inched forward, noting where the other guards were watching the slaves. The temple hadn't been left completely unguarded. She could knock them down with magic, but that would reveal her presence. We need a distraction, she thought, as she peered down the street. Something that will keep them busy. She braced herself, then shaped an unlocking spell in her mind, and cast it with all the power she could muster. The slaves jerked upright as their chains unlocked, coming free and falling to the ground with a mighty clatter. They broke free a moment later, some attacking their captors with tools or their bare hands, others running in all directions. Emily caught Frida's hand and pulled her onto the street, hurrying down Temple Row towards the Temple of Justice, as the riot swelled out of control. The guards didn't seem to notice them. They had too many other problems to worry about. So do we, Emily thought, as they reached the temple. Another group of guards stood just inside the building, looking altogether more serious. Two were definitely magic users, although she didn't think they were full sorcerers. Their magic field seemed a little unfocused. Those guards aren't distracted. Frida tapped her arm, motioned for Emily to stay put, then ran forward, dispelling the glamour as she moved. The guards noticed her. An instant before she threw a string of fireballs, brilliant lights, and blinding spells into the temple, then ran down the street. Emily watched, torn between horror and relief, as the guards either clutched their eyes or gave chase, hurling hexes and curses after Frida. It was easy, terrifyingly easy, to slip past the guards and into the temple. They didn't have a hope of noticing she was there. She tensed as she felt magic pervading the temple. Streams of power that led underground. It was very much like Mountaintop, although she didn't think Mountaintop had harvested enough power to create a god. Maybe that was why Justice hadn't made many appearances before all hell broke loose. The Hands of Justice hadn't had the power to manifest him on a regular basis. And now they do, she thought, inching forward. But where are they getting the power? The temple felt spooky. It was brightly lit, yet empty. Her footsteps echoed through cavernous chambers that should have been filled with worshippers. Statues of justice were everywhere, all following the same theme of resolute certainty. Justice was an implacable judge, an entity who could not be questioned. She caught sight of a statue holding a set of scales and winced. The scales of justice, it seemed, always had to be balanced. She allowed the magic to lead her to a set of stairs, disappearing down into the darkness. Carefully, she walked down them, keeping her magic at the ready. The rune on her chest started to heat, warning her of subtle magic. Her skin crawled as she felt it reaching out to touch her, plucking at her mind. Anyone who found the stairs without proper preparation, she realized as she reached the bottom, would not only find themselves walking out again, but also lose all memory of having discovered the stairs in the first place. They'd never know what they'd found.